Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning, Chicago, and welcome inside the clubhouse. We interrupt this March Madness weekend to bring you a little baseball anticipation. The first official day of spring, optimism definitely in the air, along with some warmer weather, and we are 12 days away from opening day. I am David Haw, joined until 11 o'clock by Bruce Levine. Good morning, Bruce. Welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, David, and good morning permanently to Inside the Clubhouse. You, like many others in the past, have made the fatal mistake of to do this show with me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, 52 weeks out of the year, talking to the greatest fans in the world, the Chicago baseball fans. So it's welcome to you, and we're going to continue to have fun. You've been doing this show for the last 5 weeks, and we've enjoyed it. And today we will bring you what we usually bring, and that is the best Chicago baseball, White Sox and Cubs information, the best guests, and open lines for you at 312-644-6767, which also happens to be our text line.
That's right, Bruce. We are going to be here until 11, hopefully interacting with a lot of listeners, and we have some great guests along the way here at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We have Beth Mowins, who's making history today as the first woman to broadcast a Cubs game, the first woman in Cubs history, on the Marquee Sports Network at 9:30. Will join us at 10 o'clock, our old buddy Rich King, former WGN fixture and now working for WhiteSox.com, has seen a lot of the White Sox out in Arizona at 10 o'clock. And then at 10:45, looking forward to this conversation, Ethan Katz, the young pitching coach. You think he ever gets tired of being referred to as a young pitching coach, Bruce, but he will join us at 10:45 and talk about the progress he has made with this deep and talented and youngish White Sox bullpen and pitching staff. So this is going to be a good way to kind of start to get toward the idea, Bruce. We have been in Chicago, immersed in Beardom, and this past week of decisions by Ryan Pace that haven't gone so well. We have been also immersed in the March Madness, the basketball tournament, college basketball state championship Sunday, Loyola versus Illinois. That's going to be a great matchup. But here we are. Here we are with the Cubs and the White Sox getting closer to opening day. Both teams coming off playoff seasons, and there's still a lot of hope and anticipation, Bruce. What has been, in your mind, the biggest development for each team this week as we get closer to opening day?
Well, I think the biggest development for the White Sox, you know, certainly is the implementing Yasmani Grandal back into the lineup. That's such an important facet of the team. And with Grandal's knee injury, he hadn't played with the team since February 24th in a game. And in a Cactus League game since the Cactus League season started just a few days later. So from all of that, you know, Grandal being healthy and ready to catch this team to begin the year, I think is huge. And that first took place on Thursday, when both he and Dallas Keuchel made his Cactus League debut. That was done on purpose as well, slow rolling his spring training into games. Not that he had an injury, but certainly protecting an older body and a body that had back issues last year. So those are two of the main elements that I saw in White Sox camp this week, and it's going to be continue to be looked at as far as Grandal's ability to make it on the field every day starting in April. With the Cubs, you know, it's more of who will be that fifth starter and what will the makeup of that bullpen look like after Kimbrel. Kimbrel finally had a one really good outing with the team after looking bad the beginning of spring training here. And not that anybody counts spring training stats, but Kimbrel's trying to regain his closer's role. So as good as he was, David, at the end of last year, where he didn't give up a run in 13 of his last 14 appearances, he never regained the closer's role. Jeffress was the closer on the team last year. And it was because Kimbrel blew it the beginning of the year, not able to retain that role. And although he incrementally came back and pitched well, you know, the season is going to be looking really hard at, you know, Kimbrel, and whether or not he's going to be able to be the man at the end. I think that's such a big part of what the Cubs are going to be looking at, as that bullpen is evolving kind of with a no-name bullpen going into 2021.
The Sox have so much talent that I think you're right. I think depth and health are going to be so important, especially when it comes to Grandal. With the Cubs, the bullpen is going to be the issue that continue to get a lot of mileage out of, because we're going to talk about it, I think, all year long. And so those are the big picture, I think, elements that of uncertainty as we kind of get closer to opening day. Bruce, this past week we had the appearance of a couple veteran pitchers on each side of town that I thought was very interesting. And I guess in the Cubs' case, you hope that Jake Arrieta's outing was a sign of better things to come. Of good things to come. And in the Sox case, you hope that Dallas Keuchel's debut was an aberration. And the expectation is that it was, because let's start there. He went out for the first inning, didn't really look comfortable, didn't really have it. It was a little bit, I don't want to say miffed, but he did not react well to being pulled out of the game in the first inning. And then because of the spring training rules, he went back. So there was a lot of, uncertainty, maybe some confusion. But Dallas Keuchel is going to have better days. But when he made his Sox debut the other day, that was not one that he will want to remember. And probably flush that out, move on. But what was your impression of what we should make of that?
Just that he's healthy and got work. There was. You're absolutely right, David. There was tremendous confusion, because Keuchel admitted on a Zoom after his outing that he didn't understand the rule. So when La Russa came out to get him after he'd already given up four runs and just a third of an inning, he was miffed, because as he knows and as we know, it's the amount of work you get in spring training, not necessarily the results, especially for a veteran pitcher that we know is going to pitch well. So this was his first outing of spring training in the Cactus League. It wasn't going well. He wasn't commanding at all. He had walked two guys, hit a guy. And when he came out, he went to the dugout and he was upset, until Ethan Katz, who will be our guest at 10:45 today, the pitching coach, told him, hey, you're going back in next inning. So he didn't even understand the rule of being able to come out of a game and go back in during spring training, which is, I think, a great rule for spring training. I like that idea that you don't have a starting pitcher who gets into trouble, you know, just blow through 30 pitches and then he's done for the day. You get him out of there quicker, then he can come back and get his work in, build up to his 75 to 90 pitches, which is where a pitcher must be at before spring training ends.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. And I don't think people have reason to worry too much about Keuchel. He has to, like everybody else, just because he's an accomplished veteran, kind of figure out, you know, the ramping up is the term that they like to use, but he is ramping up himself. And over in Cubs camp, Bruce, Jake Arrieta looked pretty sharp. I mean, he had the curveball working, and I thought it was very interesting to hear him talk afterward. And I know you are on all these Zoom calls with the Cubs and the White Sox, and that gives you the insight that you can't get from being there, but this is the next best thing. But when Jake Arrieta spoke the other day, Bruce, just on how, and this is going to be a consistent theme, I think, for him in his second go around with the Cubs, the evolution from thrower to pitcher, the focus on, you know, above the shoulders to just what he can do with a dominant right arm. He is a thinking man's pitcher now, and maybe he was before, but he had the stuff that if he could always go back and reach back and get that maybe he can't right now. But the other day we just saw a glimpse in a short outing again what he is capable of when everything is working, and it seems as if at this point in time in spring training everything's working for Jake Arrieta.
Well, you know, it's interesting because everybody was worried about the fact that he's not going to throw 94 to 96 anymore. So that won't necessarily separate his slider from his fastball, but he has become a pinpoint pitcher, a guy that can command the strike zone and has learned how to pitch more and more each year as some of his stuff has considerably gone down. So that is how you survive in the major leagues. My only concern for Arrieta has been injury, which has been something that he's had to deal with over the last 3 years. Again, if he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be an important pitcher. And right now, the way it's slated, with only 10 days or so left until opening day, David, he's slated as the Cubs' number two pitcher, right behind Kyle Hendricks, in between Kyle Davies. So that's going to give them a different look there with him and his stuff being just a little bit more significant as far as power pitching than the other two.
How much does that surprise you, Bruce? And because when he came over, and I guess what is realistic to expect in terms of number of starts for Jake Arrieta? Because when he came over and signed with the Cubs in free agency, you know, there's obviously the sentimental journey that every Cub fan took in terms of, boy, this is the guy that we remember, and this is a Cub legend, if you will. And now, you know, once you have seen what he has to offer, what is a realistic expectation for this season, Jake Arrieta?
30 starts would be a good place to go, David.
Wow.
If he can start 30 games, I mean, that's what he's being paid to do. So, that is the goal. Now, that said, for every pitcher this year coming off of 11, 12, 13 starts last year, and teams wanting to make sure that there's a durability factor for all the pitchers out there, the innings load will be less. So there'll be games he throws five, right? This used to be a 6 to 7 inning pitcher in his heyday. He was a 7-inning pitcher and a Cy Young Award winner, but that's not what you want. I think all the teams are going to be watching the innings loads. Therefore, you're going to continue to see teams go with 9 and even 10 bullpen guys from time to time, 10 more in the American League where you have the DH. So from all of that, I think 150 innings, David, I think maybe 160, that would probably give you a record with an 11-9 record with a 3.80 to 4 ERA. I think that would probably
ideal. They would take that. You know, that's a good investment. That would be a smart signing. That would be a sign that everything has gone health-wise the way that you needed to go for Jake Arrieta to be successful, Bruce. That would be terrific news if the Cubs can get that out of the right-hander. They play later today, by the way. They will be right here on the Score. 2:55 is when the broadcast begins with Zach Zaidman and Ron Coomer, our buddies in the booth. Cubs-Rockies today on the Score. It's going to be another step closer to opening day. And Bruce, we everybody knows Jake Arrieta. Everybody knows Dallas Keuchel. What I like about spring training, what I find fascinating, maybe this is, part of the reason I when we look at NFL training camps, I remember the August All-Pro players, the guys who star in Bourbon A for the Bears, but you may never hear from them again. There are always surprises at spring training. There are always guys who maybe you don't expect to be talking about 12 days before opening day. P.J. Higgins is one of those guys in Cubs camp. P.J. Higgins is a guy that David Ross talked about yesterday. And as Rossi talked about P.J. Higgins, I think it was Friday, the more he talked about P.J. Higgins, a 27-year-old backup catcher, the more I wondered, was he talking about P.J. Higgins or himself at 27? Because he said some really complimentary things. And he described a player that sounded a lot like David Ross was as a player when you talk about what he brings the Cubs behind the plate.
Well, you could only hope that he's that good. I mean, David Ross was a career outstanding defensive catcher and, one of the great thinkers of the game. That's how he stayed around for 13 years in the big leagues as a backup. Higgins is more, he's played a whole bunch of different positions and been in the Cubs system for a while, kind of a late bloomer here right now. But, this is a necessity thing right now with Romine injured and not sure that he'll be back for opening day. He was scheduled to be the backup catcher. So the Cubs are scrambling here, and Higgins has stepped up and done a nice job. David, the thing I don't like to hear is, you read the articles from different writers and hear it on commentary, how he is going to be a third baseman and first baseman as well. No, your backup catcher is that. He stays on the bench the entire game without being used to be sure that you have a second catcher in case your starting catcher gets hurt.
That's why he's there, right? He's there.
Yeah, not to play third or first.
To back up your starter. And when he's not backing up your starter, he's studying the way the other pitchers are approaching hitters, and he's doing his due diligence. I don't look at him as a utility guy, but if he's on this team, it's to back up Wilson Contreras, and it's to wait until Austin Romine is ready and to provide some sort of, comfort level. 12th round pick out of Old Dominion, not a guy that you expected to be, in the mix necessarily,
yeah.
but they're not ready for Miguel Amaya, the prospect, and there's no use really having him on the roster as opening day approaches. Is there, Bruce? I mean, that's the thought process there, and he might not be ready anyway.
No, he hasn't played over A ball. He's going to go to Double A, and if he dominates there and he does well, he'll move up to Triple A. There's all kinds of thoughts that he could be in the big leagues this year. Because his game really stepped up at the end of 2019, and he spent a lot of time last year at South Bend, preparing and learning and not playing a lot of games, but intra-squad games. So from all of that, Amaya is a guy that should hit. He's an outstanding catch-throw guy, so watch his ascension, because that's not only the key to backing up the Cubs this year and being a part of the team toward the end of the season, but also the reality that Contreras will go into his last year, his walk year in 2022.
And Contreras seems to be going into this season looking as like you want him to be looking 2 weeks before opening day. He looks pretty sharp, Bruce. He looks like a guy ready for a big season. You mentioned Yasmani Grandal and the injury concerns surrounding his season and the fact that he needs to, stay in the lineup for the White Sox. But the Cubs are in a position where, and I think both teams, they're blessed with catching, and it starts with the starters, and Wilson Contreras having himself quite a spring.
Yeah, he is. And, the fascinating part of both his ascension to 2021 opening day and Grandal is that both managers, Tony La Russa with the White Sox, David Ross with the Cubs, are considering having their catchers be their number two hitters for the lion's share of the beginning of the season. And that's interesting because it's a rarity when a catcher bats as high in the lineup, but you have a switch-hitting catcher with the White Sox and power from both sides that intrigues La Russa as a number two hitter. And with Contreras, you have a guy that has good on-base percentage, hits the ball the other way with authority, as you saw his third home run of the season go out of the park yesterday. And, very athletic guy. So from all of that, it brings back thoughts of the Chicago White Sox in 1983 when La Russa all of a sudden grabbed Carlton Fisk, a middle-of-the-order hitter, made him his number two hitter, and the White Sox took off and separated themselves 20 games from second place Rangers.
That's going way back, Bruce. I didn't even make the connection to Fisk in 83, but that's a good comparison.
What I'm here for. That's why Mitch has me sitting here, only because they don't need to Google. They just, you look at me or you look at Grobstein and there's the answer for you. But he was a guy, big guy people thought was a lumbering guy. He was probably the best base runner this side of Rudy Law on the 1983 Chicago White Sox. So being an outstanding base runner, and Contreras is as well, and a fast runner are two different things.
It's a good point. You're not used to seeing catchers at the top of the batting order, first or second. They tend to be the exception to the rule. I guess that's old school thinking, but it is traditional that you think of your catcher maybe lower in the lineup, this is going to be something fun to watch. I think Grandal fits at number two for the White Sox. Makes sense. And Contreras, that's a bit of a surprise. I wonder if he'll be there all year, but it makes sense maybe to start the season that way. You know, the days of even catchers leading off, you wonder if right around the corner. This happened before, but it doesn't happen very often. So, Bruce, we need to take a break, but we have a lot coming up. We have a really good guest list, thanks to you and your connections here. We have Beth Mowins from the Marquee Sports Network, who will make history later today and this season for the Chicago Cubs. We've got Rich King at 10 o'clock, and we've got Ethan Katz coming up at 10:45. So stay with us here, and also your opinions, 312-644-6767. With Bruce Levine, I'm David Haugh, inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is 670 The Score, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station, period. Thanks for keeping us on top, Chicago. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm David Haw with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock, where we are every Saturday talking baseball 52 weeks a year, counting down to opening day, now just 12 days away. I know you're excited about the college basketball state championship tomorrow between Illinois and Loyola. I know you're frustrated about the Bears and what they have and haven't done in the past week. But you know what? Take a little two-hour respite. Get your coffee. Look over your box scores on MLB.com or wherever you want to find them and start to contemplate the rosters of the Cubs and White Sox and what's ahead for what should be, Bruce, a very promising, enjoyable baseball season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, last year was the first time that both the Cubs and White Sox had made the playoffs in the same season since 2008. A lot of people didn't count 2020 as much of a season to really get excited about because it was only 60 games. There's true optimism on both sides of town. Probably more for the White Sox than the Cubs because the Cubs are in the midst of a lot of change and people don't really have a feel for what that rotation is going to look like, what that bullpen is going to look like, whether some of those superstars are going to be with the team all year long. So there's a little bit of anxiety in Cub Nation. White Sox a little bit more assured, I think, David, that people feel that this is their year and they will be competing not only for a division title but for a American League championship.
I think you're right, Bruce. And I think the one thing I'm very curious to see is this excitement over the fact that fans who were deprived the chance to see the Cubs play and the White Sox play in Chicago in 2020, let's stick with the Cubs for a second. It's been somewhat of an offseason of unrest. There has been that anxiety. There's a lot of angst among Cubs fans, I think, based on at least the way it started and what they weren't doing and how they weren't spending. And I wonder how the excitement and the natural optimism that spring training creates and brings will offset any of that anxiety, because this is still a pretty good team. They're going to be competitive. They're in a division that, you know, I don't know if they're the best team, but they have – you know, if certain things fall a certain way, they can feel like they're going to be in it. They still have stars who, if they produce like the backs of their baseball cards, are going to be pretty good. So I wonder how that's going to play out, Bruce, because fans are fans. It's human nature to go into this offseason and be frustrated. And now you get closer, you're like, they make me mad, but I'm still going to watch because I love baseball.
Well, you know, I think our next guest here might have a little insight into what that might be all about as well.
All right, so let's go out to the El Pamonte Ford hotline, El Pamonte Ford, Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apford.com. Bruce, our next guest is making history today.
We are pleased to bring in Beth Mowins, who will be broadcasting Chicago Cub baseball for the first time in her career and the first woman to broadcast Chicago Cub baseball ever. And we are pleased to bring her in and have her join us on Inside the Clubhouse today. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning, Beth.
Thanks for having me in the clubhouse, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's our great pleasure to have you on. And Much like every manager and player and announcer that I know, all the very good ones get butterflies before their first. Does Beth Mowins have butterflies before her first broadcast with the Cubs?
Absolutely. You know that, and it goes back to our playing days. You know it means something. You know it's important. For me, the goosebumps are a good reminder that there's really nothing better that I would want to be doing today. I'm excited about it, and I hope I love all the talk about the back of the baseball card guys, and I hope I can bring the same joy that was me as a little kid reading the back of those baseball cards with that that piece of cardboard gum that I don't know how, but sometimes I could make it last two or three days. I shudder to think about my dental bills back in the day.
Well, Beth, let's go back to those days growing up in Syracuse. So certainly, obviously, the Cubs' reach was a national one as you were growing up as well. I just wondered, what was your awareness of what the Cubs baseball? Did it reach out to Syracuse, New York, or how did you grow up following baseball, and who was the team in your heart?
So I was one of the, I guess, the first cable TV kids, right? So, we were home from school in the afternoon, and those were the days where there was still day baseball, and even the playoffs were day games. So I grew up in upstate New York, which is New York Yankee country, and the old days of the Bronx Zoo. So I grew up understanding a lot about drama around the game, and how much fun that could be, and how crazy it could be at times for fans. But that was all. You could catch Yankee games on PIX and Red Sox games on TV 38, and the Braves were on Turner, and everybody in America knew, Harry Carey and the Cubs, and the tradition of Wrigley Field is something even as a youngster you knew about. And we actually, when we played wiffle ball out in the street, guys, our neighbors, they had the only pool in the neighborhood, and they happened to line their backyard fence with shrubs, so it was part green monster and part ivy when we were playing our wiffle ball games out in the outfield.
So growing up with all brothers obviously was a huge benefit for you, Beth, and the idea that either keep up or go off in the corner and do something with your other friends obviously was a motivating factor. Talk a little bit about growing up with brothers and how that helped motivate you and give you the idea that sports would be what you seek as you were an adult.
Yeah. I think it's real important. Any situation that a person is in that you would think would be uncomfortable, the quicker you can become comfortable in the gym or at the park when you're the only girl around, that never bothered me. So I think that was a big advantage. The other thing too, there were a few other girls in the neighborhood that were really good athletes. So I did have some other girls to run with, and all the guys in the neighborhood, it was no big deal to be playing with the girls. So I think that was definitely an advantage. And then just being a part of a team my whole life. My dad was a basketball coach, and my mom was a huge sports fan, from Montreal. So we had hockey in our lives and basketball to get us through the winters. And then, baseball all summer long and kickball in the backyard. So I think it introduced me not only to sports but to fandom, and really the vocabulary of sports at a young age, and that's kind of what helped steer me towards the play-by-play side of things.
Joined by Beth Mowins here on Inside the Clubhouse, I'm David Haugh with Bruce Levine, and later today at 3 o'clock, Beth will become the first woman to serve as a play-by-play announcer for the Cubs against the Rockies on the Marquee Sports Network. And Beth, you have done this before in terms of blazing a trail that nobody else has blazed. You've made history with the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball. A lot of things in your career have been first, and you've done a lot of great work in terms of making strides for women in broadcasting. When you look back and reflect, and I know you still have a long way to go and a lot of games to call, what are you proudest of in terms of your career and the history that you've been part of?
I think probably it's you know, you understand that there are a lot of eyes on you, and I think I try to focus on the young eyes that are on me, and so you want to set a standard. You want to, you know, show young kids, and I guess in particular young girls, that there's a lot of hard work involved, and there you've got to kind of have that go-getter mentality and be a little bit aggressive, which isn't always a natural thing for girls to sort of be at the front of the line and to stand out. And so I hope I'm able to show people, hey, it's okay to actually, you know, be kind of the one that drives the bus and to be a leader and to be ambitious. Those are fine qualities to have. And, you know, I hope that you set a standard. You always want to be at your best in the big moments. And so that's all about the preparation and the process of being at your best, so that, you know, from my standpoint, I want to do everything I can to help my team and to help all of us have a good game. And so when you take care of your business and then you can help people get better at their business, I think that's hopefully something that I've been able to establish on top of having a lot of fun. That's the key. It's a game at the end of the day.
Beth, you have done college softball for years. You're the voice of college softball on ESPN. But the pace of baseball is so different from football and basketball, where the sport itself generates the play-by-play. With baseball, you have an average of 3 hours and 5 minutes of talking baseball, talking about those two teams, conversing with today it'll be JD, your new co-broadcaster on Cub Baseball on the Marquee Network, and just being interesting for three hours and 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. What are the challenges of Major League Baseball and being interesting and keeping an audience for those 3 hours and 5 minutes?
Yeah. Well, the first and foremost, I've been told that some of my best work, guys, is when I lay out. So I'll try a little bit of that from time to time. that's always a little easier when there are fans involved and there's, an environment in the ballpark, and hopefully we're going to have that real soon. But, you know, I think it's similar in terms of the preparation of, you know, jotting down a few nuggets about interesting conversations that I might have with JD. You know, is the top four in the rotation set? How many lefties do you think they'd like to have in the bullpen? You know, tell us a little bit about the process. You know, a guy like Shelby Miller added a pitch in the offseason. You can't just Google how to throw a nasty slider. So maybe we have a conversation one half inning about what that means to actually try and add something to your arsenal. And then I also think, you know what, you're not in just a baseball vacuum. I'm sure today we'll touch on, you know, who's your pick for the Illinois-Loyola-Chicago game tomorrow, because that's probably on the minds of a lot of people watching the game today, you know, in the NCAA tournament. So I think you try and find those moments where you can take a deep dive into some analytics when it pertains to a particular batter. Spring training, obviously, you're talking a lot of big picture stuff, so that generates conversations. And then, you know, we're also fans, so I think we try and just rely on our instincts about, if I'm sitting on the couch at home right now, what am I interested in hearing about, or what conversations am I having with my buddies right now?
You know, Beth, I have to ask, and you're obviously going to have these conversations, and it's much broader that you just described than just calling the game in front of you. How comfortable are you in terms of the Cubs culture, you know, because it's so steeped in tradition, and from the outside looking in, and what are some things that have stood out over the years that either you're aware of or that you're and appreciate? And I have to ask you this, too. Part of that is Joe Madden, a fellow Lafayette College graduate. Did you have a connection with Joe and a relationship with the guy who played football at Lafayette before you were a point guard there?
We knew of each other, and we have texted from time to time. Joe was a little bit older than me, We didn't really cross paths a whole lot. But, you know, I think part of it is utilizing contacts like that. So, for example, you know, Jim Deshays and I have a contact through his beloved Lemoyne College. That's where my dad and my brother went. You know, when I'm working with Ryan Dempster, a fellow Canadian, you find moments or connections like those to, you know, build a little chemistry and make things as conversational as you can. And then also, you know, part of my research is tapping into friends that I have here in Chicago, and an Adam Amin or a Sarah Spain or my buddy Joe Pizzotti, who was on Doug Bruno's staff at DePaul and is a big Cubs fan. So you try and utilize your friends in the business to dive into the culture a little bit. You know, you're wary of other friends, you know, like a Jason Benetti, who suggested I talk a lot about the South Side. I immediately recognize that as a trap. Yeah. and so, you know, I think humor, and I think having fun, you know, great advice I got from Boog Shambi as well when I talked to Boog yesterday. Don't try and fake the fact that you know everything about the Cubs. I don't, and I'm learning a lot as I go along. What I know of, what my base and my foundation is, you know, what the rest of America knows about how special this place is, about Mr. Cub, about Ron Santo, about Rhino. You know, you know a little bit about what has gone on here. You know how significant, you know, the World Series was in 2016, and you kind of grow from there, and that's how I'm going to approach it and try and at least provide the passion and joy that Cubs fans, you know, bring to the table as well.
The beauty of you becoming an announcer for the Cubs is because, knowing Mike McCarthy and Mike Santini, they hired the best announcer to do this job. The fact that you're a woman is just a sidebar to the whole thing. And getting over the idea that, you know, this is a novelty and that you are the announcer is the cool thing. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, Susan Waldman's been a great friend of mine for 35 years, and she is, you know, sick and tired of being called every time there's a woman issue in sports, and being ignored from time to time about the fact that she's an expert when it comes to baseball.
Yeah. You know, I think we're getting closer to that day, and you know, I'm grateful to everybody at Marquee and in the Cubs organization for not asking why, but asking why not. Why not use Beth? Why not use somebody who's sort of outside the box but has a lot of experience as a sportscaster? And obviously, Susan is the trailblazer in all this, and it's great to see a lot of other women involved. And my good friend Jessica Mendoza, I spoke with her yesterday, and quite frankly, guys, you know, it's minor league baseball has become a tremendous pathway for a lot of young play-by-play announcers, male or female, because a minor league team, and I'm really hoping that, you know, we'll still be able to have the money available for local radio and TV announcers. It's a great pathway with a lot of reps all summer long to put the work in. And so, you know, I don't think people look at Doris Burke anymore as a female NBA announcer. She's just an NBA announcer, and I think we're really, really close to that in just about every other sport, too.
That's great, Beth. Have fun today. Appreciate your time this morning, and I think that people are going to be in for a treat when you get into the booth this afternoon on the Marquee Sports Network, 3 o'clock, Cubs-Rockies. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate being in the clubhouse with you.
Enjoy it.
Yep, Beth Mowins, who will do the Cubs-Rockies game later today. Bruce, we have plenty of other things to get to in the 10 o'clock hour. We'll wrap up some Cubs thoughts when we come back. Inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
You know, I don't want to underestimate the pitching core that we have. I think we've got some sneaky good pitchers that maybe not are on the radar, but, you know, there's definitely a willingness to be great from that group. And, you know, I'm seeing more depth than I thought we had from some of the pickups in the off season to these guys' performance, and you know, even sending some of these guys down. There's a lot of talent here on the pitching side. But yeah, I mean, like if you looked at our team and what our strength should be, I think offensively should be our strength. But I also thought that last year, to be honest with you, and pitching carried the day, carried us to a central title. So I'm. You know, we never know. It's baseball. We'll see how this whole thing shakes out.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm David Haugh with Bruce Levine. And Bruce, that was the voice of David Ross. We had a conversation with him via Zoom on Friday versus the pitching versus defense or offense, and which is it going to be the element that carries this Cubs team the furthest this season. I know it's early. I know it's mid-March, 12 days of opening day, but what do you see when you look at this Cubs team in terms of projection? Which will be stronger? I got to think it's the offense, isn't it? Isn't this going to be a team that, if they're going to be successful, it's going to be because their main guys figure out a way to become more dangerous hitters than they have been, and that will offset any sort of concerns you have with this pitching rotation?
Well, David, you're going to have to score runs. But no team wins without good pitching. We know that. Nobody. You might sneak out a division by being a little bit more offensive and outscoring the opposition more often, winning 88 games or something like that. But you're not going to advance in the playoffs without good pitching. It's going to have to be there. But the offense has to be at least decent. I mean, it was so heavy pitching last year as far as the success of the team. You know, a .220 batting average, which was 27th in baseball for the Cubs, an OPS that was ranked 20th in baseball, with guys that are, you know, career 800 to 900 plus OPS guys. That has to change, and I think there's a lot of optimism. Yeah. There's a lot of optimism that's going to change.
I think the pitching goes without saying almost every year. Baseball's about pitching, just like football's about defense. It's hard to win without it. But when you look at the Cubs, I think you're so fed up as a fan and watching them from the offense underperforming, the offense being broken, which is a soundbite that still applies and is 2 years old, for goodness sakes. You want to look at the season and think, okay, you have pitching concerns. The bullpen's uncertain. The rotation's rebuilt. But all these things could become tolerable, and you can survive. I don't know about going deep in the playoffs. I just think about contending in the division first step first. But if your offense is fixed and the guys who you expect to hit the way they can have shown they can back when in the heyday, everything else will feel like it's less of a weakness, and you'll get by and get to where you need to go and be competitive. So it starts, to me, with fixing an offense that's been broken for too long.
Yeah, agreed, David. And, just the idea that you're looking at a team that has failed in September for numerous years in a row, offensively, having had big leads and given them up. That's a concern for the offense continuing to be productive all year long.
When you look at the Cubs roster construction, David Ross also talked about debating between a 4- and 5-man bench. You can have 26 on your opening day roster. Because of what we just talked about, do you think that there's he's leaning one way or another?
As far as the extra men go?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's going to be between 4 and 5. They have to decide whether they want 9 pitchers, or they can get by with 8. There's some off days early on where they're contemplating taking 8 bullpen guys and having 5 guys for the backups. Because, David, you know, they're back to pinch hitting for the pitcher again. No DH in the National League. So you need that extra guy. You need somebody that can come off that bench. And you're also playing with 2 less guys. Last year the roster was 28. This year it's 26. So there are a lot of concessions and a lot of things that National League managers are going to have to get used to.
A lot of things still to play out in the final couple of weeks of spring training, both sides of town. We've been talking Cubs. We're going to switch gears and go to the White Sox when we come back. We're going to talk to our old pal Rich King, who for years was a fixture on WGN and now is out working with WhiteSox.com. He has seen a lot of the Sox in Glendale. Looking forward to talking to him next on Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Start your day on The Score with Mully and Hall, live at 5. For Chicago. From Chicago. They're live and local, covering the Bears, Cubs, Sox, Bulls, and Blackhawks. Mully and Hall, delivering the sports stories that matter to Chicago. Mornings 5 to 9, only on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. We'll be right back.